Off the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. We're 10 minutes in, which means, you know, we're 10 minutes behind somehow, which doesn't surprise me when you got these kinds of Mondays after big weekends. And Jimmy Ryerson just off with us. We're I think Casey's reaching for Mig. Now, he's down there. He's at the sale, so it might be a little noisy. But he should, unless he's right in the middle of bidding, Case. Try him one more time, because we could always swap him with Damon if we have to. All right, yeah. Try one more time to Mig. And it's funny. I was going to say to Mig if he was right there on the line. I was going to ask him if he had won some races over the years for Jimmy Ryerson. And it just so happens I'm looking at the champagne from 1995. Where Unbridled Song, you know, really misfired. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He was fourth, he didn't go favorite. Actually, Hennessy was the favorite. This was some notable champagne, but it was Maria's Mon that won that champagne with Robbie Davis. And for those of you that, again, you want to talk about a horseman that people should be aware of. Rick Schosper trained Maria's Mon. I'm just looking at that chart, and, you know, because I was going to ask Mig if he had ridden for Jimmy, but here he is. Here's Mig, who actually finished right behind Unbridled Song in that champagne. He was riding Featherbox, and... Oh, there he is. There's Mig right now. And
Buckland Farm.
How about that? But here's the hook on this story. Tony Black finished ahead of both of you. Tony came to town on Devil's Honor, who was third in that champagne.
That was Walter Reese, right?
Yeah.
In Featherbox, did Angel train Featherbox by then?
Yes, actually.
Yeah. Angel trained for Buckland. I rode a bunch of horses. Featherbox was pretty good. He was a better one-run sprinter, but he was good. Wow, you're bringing up some names, man. You always make me feel old when I come on this show.
That's not... How can you feel old when you're out there going on 20-mile hikes up in the Catskills?
I'm trying to outrun Father Time.
Well, you're in the Catskills so often that you're going to be headlining at the Neville next week.
Bada boom.
Hey now, tip your servers. I'll be here all week, literally.
Well, I had to cancel the hike this week because I'm down at Timonium for the Phase Exhibition sale, so no hike this week. Although there is a neat little park not far from the hotel that I might have to go explore later.
You know, between Timonium, for those that have never done this, next year or, you know, in subsequent years, when we get to visit the revitalized Pimlico when the time comes, and the time's not far off, as we talked with Alan Foreman the other day, but you literally, if you go out Reisterstown Road from Pimlico, from Park Heights, in about 6 minutes, once you pass the highway, you're out in the middle of the country. You would not believe that you're 15 minutes from the city of Baltimore, and it turns into countryside in about 30 seconds.
No, you know, it's funny. I found that out. I was exploring, and it's amazing. Literally, like you're not exaggerating. 5 or 6 minutes, it goes from basically, you know, inner city to hunt country. I mean, yeah. it's yep. Incredible.
Yep. I've discussed this with Sean Clancy because I got to go out to Herb Naylor's farm. And Cyril Murphy invited me out to the farm to see, you know, to see the spread. And I said, "How far is it?" "Oh," he said, "it's 15 minutes from Pimlico." I said, "What? What are you talking about? 15 minutes from Pimlico?" And I should have known, because if you go up Hunt Valley and if you head toward York, Pennsylvania, out of Baltimore, yep, it right away it's countryside. But it is, I mean, it's delightful. It's one of the aspects of going to Baltimore, between, you know, between the harbor and you know, between the charms of the city in general, and there's people listening who, you know, who seem to only get their news from one network, who probably are saying, "Ugh, Baltimore's awful. You go see for yourself."
It's
about as great
beautiful
a town as we have.
Yeah, well, and you know, I stay at a hotel off of Shawan Road. If you go out straight Shawan Road, you run into Sagamore, you run into all the big farms, and there's a park over there. I think it's called Oregon Ridge. It looks like it's just got nice trails and stuff. I probably have to get up early tomorrow morning before I have to come back to the sales ground to hit it up. I'll be done in the dark tonight. But absolutely beautiful area. And now I'm walking by the grandstand, the apron of Timonium Racetrack. And I've got to tell the story. So my valet for years in New York, John Milano, was a jockey before he became a valet and galloped horses. He still holds the all-time record at Timonium for most wins at a meet. He rode 82 winners in a 40-day meet here.
Wow.
How about that? So
wow.
How great for a rider to have a former jockey who could ride, obviously, in your corner, come back after a race and, you know, I did this or did that, and talk to him about it. John was, I mean, obviously he's a dear friend. He's my daughter's godfather. But, you know, he was also an incredible resource for me.
How about that? That's I'll have to ask Tony too. I'm sure Tony rode against him.
Oh, absolutely. I think too. John was runner up for the Eclipse Award to maybe Tommy Wallace, if I'm not mistaken. But a fabulous rider. Got to a point he couldn't make the weight anymore. But lifelong racetracker, retired a few years ago. So he had, at one point, he had me, Robbie Davis, Eddie Maple, Sean Bridgman, Craig Perrett. And then later on, after I was done, Ramon Dominguez.
Nice list.
Had a very successful, yeah, he had some good riders.
Rich is down at Timonium for the sale, and today and tomorrow, and the regional, a lot of regional breads, that including the first hips today, I think 150 New York breads through the ring. So we'll be watching later if we get off the air, and we'll do some recapping the next couple of days. And you're doing a little shopping, right?
Yeah, just got done looking at a bunch of horses. I actually missed Casey's first call because I had my eyes on a horse and was comparing notes with my son Joseph. But no, you know, it's great. And you know, these sales for me, it's just catching up with a lot of people that, you know, I see periodically, but I've known for years and years. So it's a big social event as well, Steve, as you know.
Absolutely. Well, let's get, I know you've only got, you know, short amount of time, and I still actually have got to get the visits in with Damon Dillodobico and Peter Miller. And Rich, some recapping from the weekend, and I know Tony will talk about it later. Some jockey decisions and some performances. Let's start in the Preakness. Give us your take on what transpired here, because the race was certainly run in a different manner than the Derby, and Johnny and Robbie Alvarado, the colt and the filly. What happened out there?
Well, you know, I think Johnny got put in a very difficult position, because even though they're not a coupled entry, they're different ownership, the other Baffert horse is up on the lead with him. And you're the one outside of that horse, so, you know, it's almost your responsibility to kind of try to stay off of him. You don't want two horses from the same barn dueling each other into defeat. So Johnny, trying not to take anything away from Authentic, I think, you know, went out a few paths away from them so they wouldn't stay as competitive, as keen. And that allowed you know, Robbie Alvarado the opportunity to go on up inside of him. Now, it was a bold move because you know when you make that move as a rider, that early inside run, you're going to have to run every step from there. The outside horse is now going to engage you, and the race is on from that point. So he obviously felt like he had a lot of filly under him, which he did. And, I mean, she's remarkable. What an absolute throwback kind of mare, filly. Nine starts this year, nine different racetracks against the best that, you know, whatever division she's in has to offer. And she's Hickory. And then, you know, looking at her, the pictures and the video coming out, her grazing the day after and this morning, she doesn't even look like she loses weight out of her races. I mean, as hard as she runs, she comes out of them with incredible flesh, just looks fantastic. Credit to Kenny McPeak, what a job he's been able to do. But so I think, you know, anybody that's looking to criticize Johnny, you know, you're in a kind of tough position when you're up there with a horse trained by the same guy, and you know, just the two styles did not complement each other. And then they hooked up, and this is in no way to take anything away from the Phillies' win, because it is the second fastest Preakness in history, and she ran. But you get a big colt gets down next to a filly, and particularly a filly with a dominant personality like that. And you can go, you know, with horses in the wild. The dominant mare is more dominant than the stallion herd. They rule the roost. They're the boss. And then you get a colt that, you know, is a definitely all colt, gets down next to a mare. Well, what's the incentive to leave her? She's a beautiful filly, and she's running hard, and she's giving me that evil eye that I'm the lead mare. You know, maybe he was never going to go by her. You know, I go back to Curlin and Rags to Riches, kind of a dominant mare. Curlin gets up alongside of her. Rags to Riches wasn't going by her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got to factor that in a little bit. And again, this is in no way to take anything away from her run. She's phenomenal. I'm a huge fan.
You essentially touched on both parts of this. You know, Johnny did say one thing, Rich, that Authentic kind of was waiting. It was kind of idling on the lead when, you know, when he had put his head in front about midway on the backstretch. But at the same time, it's just hard to understand why Johnny wouldn't then, you know, ease away from the field and basically grab the race by the throat the way he did in the Derby. And simultaneously, you know, here's the 1-2 almost three paths open. You don't want to drop down a little bit there on the backstretch and make it a little bit more of a challenge to a horse to come up inside you?
Well, again, I really think he was probably a bit preoccupied with the fact that there was the other Baffert horse there and trying not to get in his way or make them,
yeah,
you know, over-engage. You know, I that's the way I saw it. And I've been in a position where, you know, you're in a, you know, riding for the same barn, and suddenly you're in the same position with another horse in that barn. You're like, oh, I don't want to, you know, get in a speed duel with my own entry, or, you know, somebody from the same barn. It's not an entry. But I kind of felt bad for him because I knew in what he had to be thinking. And then when Robbie Alvarado seized it, he seized the moment. That's what, you know, your best riders do. They seize the moment. And but again, you know, if it backfires and you make that move, then, you know, you're going to be criticized. And that's, you know, this is what I like to say. You have to dare to be great. Well, he dared to be great, and it worked.
Talk about that part with Robbie, because I'm sure you saw what I saw early in the week, where you know, people just were deriding the choice, and you know, I said quite clearly on Monday after the draw, or Tuesday, I said, you don't have to worry that she's not going to be in good hands, and that she's her chances are diminished in any way, having a guy like Robbie Alvarado, who had won that race and has been in as many big races as anybody you could have named.
Well, let me ask you a question, Steve. Like, for riders, what's the first thing to go on riders? Like, there's so much conversation of, you know, when people say a rider's, you know, over the hill. Is it their heart? Is it their eyes? Is it their legs, their knees? What do you think goes first with a rider?
Their confidence.
Their customers. That's the first thing to go. When people decide you can't do it anymore, they run away from you like you have the plague. And I've seen, listen, we have riders in New York right now, and there's so much young talent that it's just so hard. There's only so many good horses to go around. Mike Luzzi can still ride. He had a great second on a Keith O'Brien horse yesterday, but people are looking for the younger guys. They have less battle scars. They're riding hot. They have high energy. Bobby Alvarado could still always ride. He just lost business, and then it's hard. It's a catch 22. How do I showcase I can still do it if I get to ride, 20-1 shots all the time? I'm fighting just this whole position instead of fighting to win the race. It's funny. I used to talk about this with Jacinto Vasquez a lot, and he's the one who said that to me. What goes first, your legs, your heart? I'm thinking about it. He goes, your customers. He goes, people make a decision about you, and it doesn't mean they're correct, but then how do you get the horses? They have the horses that you want to ride. So, for him to get this opportunity and obviously make the most of it, I'm sure it's going to help give him a revive his career, give him some sort of renaissance here, I think. He's obviously still very capable.
Agreed. And, this also gets into discussions about jock agents and that element. And it's not easy. It's complex. And, I'm going to drop it in Tony's lap later in the week. We'll let him riff as well. Beyond Preakness, Rich, an amazing weekend of racing, and Belmont Saturday and Sunday, obviously. We'll go over some of these with Andy, but between Keeneland, Belmont, and the rest of the Pimlico action, what else really did you come away with?
No, I mean, it was just really fun racing. Everywhere you looked, everything to remind you of why you fell in love with this game to begin with. I mean, I felt like a fan this weekend, and being in the industry over 40 years, to still be able to feel like a fan is a really cool thing. I thought Channel Maker, they figured out, some horses, just let them alone. Leave them to their own devices. Wasting time always trying to rate him in the past, and gets into a fight, and he's a very difficult horse to rate anyway, because he has that head carriage. He's already up in the rider's face. You take a hold of him, it's even more in your face. Just throwing the reins at him, letting him clear off, and then he rates himself. You see his ears come up. So Manny Franco and Bill Mott figuring out the best way to handle him. I thought his run was terrific. Really nice filly from Clement, that two-year-old filly. Is it Plum Island?
Plum Alley.
Her, I'm sorry. If I don't have it right in front of me, Steve, too many hits to the head. She's just really classy. Love her. I mean, just, again, the whole weekend, I'm a big Uni fan. She beat Newspaper of Record, who I think is another one that just needs to be left alone to her own devices. Let her do her thing. She's capable of running fast and continuing. Why not make everybody drunk chasing you instead of taking her weapon away? But Uni's very good, and I thought she needed that one race to shake the ring rust off, so I'm a big fan of hers. She reminds me of that filly, that mare from years ago, Megahertz. Not very big, but that really, terrific turn of foot that you love to see in these turf races. Seeing Peter Brandt win the Arc, seeing those colors.
I haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I got a big kick out of that. Somebody that, it's such a shot in the arm for our industry to have Peter Brandt back in and as involved as he is again. And I go back to, when he had Weya and Just the Game, I was just coming around the track and knew the groom of those horses, knew the exercise riders, and, they were just, incredible fillies and mares. And then, of course, racing against his horses, beating Magombo with Walkweight at Belmont in the Jamaica. And, he's had such a rich history. And to see him back in as involved in win the Arc, and again, seeing those colors, internationally, I got a big kick out of that.
Well, and Complexity has come up this morning too, that performance in the Kelso. And if he's right, He's a handful. And
the job that Chad Brown's done with that horse is phenomenal. You look at you know his footwear, and I mentioned it to Chad. I interviewed him after the race before we went on air. I said, he's got interesting footwear. You know, he's got glue on shoes with gel pads, and you could see they do a tremendous amount of work with his feet, and that's been his Achilles heel. Pardon the pun, no pun intended, actually, but he just, you know, they get his feet right. Whether it's the old adage, no foot, no horse. Well, you can't understate, or you can't overstate, excuse me, the job he's done to get that horse as good as he is and sound enough to be able to perform up to the best of his ability.
We also saw a couple of efforts in the two turf races, Gaffo for Christoph and Channel Maker's effort for Mott under Manny Franco in the Joe Hirsch. There was nothing but in a nice matchups and some notable results. There were a couple of, by the way, a couple in New York. I'm just looking at my list of New York stakes, and I got to give a shout out because I didn't get a chance to do it Friday. Country Dick Lugovich won the Bongard the other day. How about that with Hold the Salsa? Good job, Dick.
Incredible. Owner, trainer. Oh. Steve, you still there?
Yeah, we're there.
Well, I thought I lost you. I mean, just great to see him rewarded, a guy who, you know, has been doing this a long time. I remember meeting him when I was a kid coming around with Dennis Bryda, and, you know, to be the owner, trainer, breeder of a horse like that. And Gaffo, you got to love that. And just the year Christoph's been having. I mean, you know, he always does well, but it just seems like there's been no lull. I mean, from Belmont Spring to Saratoga to Belmont Fall, And you know what? You like to see people that do the work that Christoph does and his team, great assistants. Now his son Miguel is one of his top assistants. You know, and I watched Miguel grow up. He's been, you know, good friends with my son Joseph. They grew up together. So, you know, I get a kick out of it seeing that and the next generation emerging, if you will. And the silly things that useless knowledge, but I actually look stuff like this up as I'm preparing for the Fox shows for Naira. Is Gaffo, it means owl in Italian. So,
how about
you can do what you want with it, but that's what it means. So.
That's great. I like that.
Help the handicap. There you go.
Gaffo. That was a very sage, wise old insight. I love it.
Yeah. Well, he swooped down on the field, right? So.
Oh, boy. Rich, go buy yourself a nice yearling, and best of luck. We'll be watching the results and watching the sale, and I appreciate it. I wanted to get, you know, kind of the snap snap response while it was fresh post.
Well, this could get interesting here, Steve, and I appreciate coming on, but this could get interesting if I show up at the house on Wednesday with two yearlings. See how Carmelo's going to react.
You've talked yourself out of worse.
Have a great day.
Rich Migliori, everybody. And, of course, back later this week with America's Day at the Races on the Fox Network. And the coverage continues right through. We're going to have Damon Dillodovico join us. And I just went to his page at Equibase. And it now it says graded stakes winning trainer, and it's got to feel good. And he joins us now off of Lackey's win in the DeFrancis Dash. Damon, congratulations!
Hey, thank you very much. It's funny because I had looked at that page also, and it's awful lonely there, but it's there, you know.
It doesn't matter.
No, that's right.
Once you get that green link, and that's all that matters. And it's really unfair because you had the misfortune with Immortal Eyes. I mean, by all rights, you know, that period when the DeFrancis Dash was, you know, kind of laying there on its side, ungraded, just for a couple of years. But so it's your second DeFrancis Dash.
Right, and it's a big race in the state, so we're happy, listed, graded, whichever. It's funny that when it was listed, it was 350, And as a graded race, it was 2. But I guess that's how the times are now.
Well, exactly. And what's amazing about this is that Lackey, at the age of 7, and you looked at this race, and you could tell he was competitive, but he was going to have to run an A race to win this thing on Saturday.
Oh, no doubt about it. And my biggest concern were his first two races at Pimlico were a couple years ago, but the Maryland Sprint Handicap, and each race he underperformed for us. So now they were wet tracks, and I'm sure that's what it was, but it still kind of had me concerned. Maybe he didn't like the surface because, all that spring going up to that race, I thought he was going to love it. And then, he'd been on a wet track before and been successful, but on those 2 days he was not.
He's 7 years old, but truthfully, he's lightly raced. There's not a tremendous amount of mileage. I mean, you could look at a 7 year old that might have, 45, 50 starts. He's got 20. This was his 28th start. He's won 10 times. So he's been placed well, and he rarely, misfires.
Yeah, well, a lot of that, I appreciate the owner letting me be as patient as I need to be with him. And not that he's a horse with issues. I mean, he's tough as nails. You guys were talking about Hickory earlier. He's very solid. And I think, I think we were kind of gearing up to the match series, a couple years ago.
Sure.
So we didn't want to abuse him going into that. And last year we kind of felt like he needed a little bit of a break. And that was the first time we really kind of thought, it was time. So he's come back from that. Awesome.
Bring us back before we talk about the race specifically. Talk about the origins with him. And, he's got, he's a Maryland bred, and he's by Cuba. He's out of a Swear by Dixie mare.
Don't make fun of my horse. Tom Michaels bred the horse. And a rider, when I started out for Dale Capuano, 30-some years ago, he had a rider there with us, Lisa Ruck, who also rode in the afternoon. But somehow up in the New England area, Lisa and Buck, Mr. Kalinowski, knew each other, or friends or whatever. And he ended up buying the horse from Tom when I guess through a contact of Lisa's. And so Lisa worked with them a little bit, and when it came time to send them down, she recommended us. So, big thank you to Lisa Ruck for recommending us. And, I don't know. I probably did a horrible job of explaining that, but
no.
That's what I remember.
He didn't hit the track, though, until fairly late, right? He was...
Yeah, you know what? His early breezes were just awful. Until we actually castrated him, I wasn't getting much from him at all. And I think that really kind of slowed our process down. He just wasn't getting anything out of his breezes. And then at the end of that season, right before he ran, it was impossible to find a race for him. In fact, I ended up starting him on the turf my hands up in the air. I was like, we got to run this guy. And so that's why we ended up there. And just a bunch of different reasons why he started so late. Mostly I feel like it was struggling getting him to give me an effort when he worked.
He didn't take long to break his maiden, and he was dangled for $25,000. In fact, he went on a sloppy track at Laurel that day. And, then right away you realized, this is now a horse that doesn't need to be available for purchase.
Once we had castrated him, then we started to see some ability, but I had just compiled all these 52 halves and all this stuff. And I couldn't let it go to waste. So we had an opportunity to be aggressive. And it allowed us to have a couple extra conditions, because here we write the starters a 2 life or 25, for 25, 2 life, 3 life. So it gave me a couple extra races, too. So we definitely got away with one there.
One part of this, on a day where everybody was watching a lot of the local jockey community, the Maryland and Mid-Atlantic riders, picking up national mounts, or, you know, basically, you know, riding for trainers that were coming in. Horacio Karamanos is completely associated with him and has ridden him in all but three of his starts.
That's correct. And breezes him in most of his workouts. So as far as he just knows everything about the horse. So I don't have to have that concern when we come to the paddock. Now, the two other riders that rode him, it's Trevor and Edgar, they're no slouches, but
no.
I just prefer Horacio. He's just so familiar with the guy. So,
well, and you know, the there's a horse that he's also. I think back, the last few years, and I think about Mary Epler and Paige McKinney, and he was the regular rider on Paige.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. I think, just to know the horses and, you know, be in tune with them, I think that carries a little bit extra.
And I'm just noticing, Damon, we're forgetting one rider. There is a fourth jock, Angel Serpa.
Yeah,
Angel Serpa.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about him in the opening race. Yeah, that's true. Poor guy,
Mr. Carol Cedeno.
Yeah. and look, he's a good friend of mine, but this is just how it worked out. You know, when it seemed like Horacio and he were going to click, we just kind of went on with it.
Well done. Well, talk about Saturday and what the thoughts were. I mean, he's a horse that generally is in the race flow. He's usually never too far out of it. If he is, it's going to be an unsuccessful afternoon. But thoughts?
I almost blew that one because when speaking to Horacio before the race, I just didn't want to be a passenger. I kind of wanted him to just try to be somewhat forward, even though there was a good bit of pace. It just seemed like that's how the track was playing. I mean, last time he ran here, Laurel, it was nothing but closers, and I think it kind of ended up getting us a little bit. But Saturday, I just wanted him to be aggressive, and he ends up in the mix going in the turn, and right away he has to check a little bit again. So I'm thinking at that point, I don't know how the heck this guy is going to rally against these horses from that. But he got him to the good part of the track, and he did. You know, Paco came over on us a little bit to just race riding. But, you know, there was a few bumps and stuff approaching the wire, which, you know, I think allowed Eastern Bay to kind of get a little bit closer. But as far as I was standing right in front of the winner's circle, and they right on the wire where I know you know where it's at. And
yeah,
the whole jockey balcony, I felt like, was screaming for this four horse. And just everybody around it, it sounded like a regular Preakness, in non-COVID times. It was crazy. My skin was crawling. And then an applause after the winner's circle. It was a special moment to be acknowledged by all my, you know, my friends here at the track.
It's always special to win, on a big day, and then you fold in, the first graded stake win, even though you've won a DeFrancis and won plenty of other races with names on them. But with a horse like this that's been on the shed row for essentially 4+ years, that really enhances the whole thing. It feels like it was a pretty perfect scenario.
Oh, definitely. And you know, when you're here as long as he is, you know, he picks up a lot of friends and fans. So when it comes together, it's really awesome.
Well, and you know, we brought up Immortal Eyes earlier, and I'm sure it was after one of his wins the last time we spoke, and he was a million. I think when he became a millionaire, we might have had you on a few.
It was
years
right
ago.
Around that summer, yeah.
Exactly, and that's when you first made. I think that's when you first made your initial appearance on Twitter as Booty Juice, and then you. then you kind of cleaned up. You kind of changed your image and to more of a stable presence.
That was my son's influence. I wasn't really on it, and then when I go to it, I got all kinds of garbage on there. So I don't know where it all comes from, but a lot of it's pretty embarrassing. But my son has hooked me up with a more proper Twitter account. So
well,
and believe me, we've tried to delete the other one a number of times. I don't know what's in there, but. I don't know how that works.
Well, I'll say this: it is always stuck in my head, and so whenever I go to
this guy's a pervert.
Find you, yeah, it had cachet. There's probably a website in there, a domain. There's something there, right?
Something
off of that.
Something's in there. Something
too
shady.
Funny. What how do you proceed now? I mean, with him. I mean, what other there's a regular parade of these kinds of stakes. He got a very solid high 90s buyer, and not his career best. He's he ran that 108 going back to the Frank Whiteley.
Right, the Whiteley, yeah.
I'm
not really sure, Steve. The obviously we give it some time to think about it. He's not Marilyn Million.
No.
Nominated, so hate to point him to a race and this close to running a race and not get in. I'll probably just try to run Taco in there, who is also not Marilyn May nominated, so that the race would have to fall apart. I don't know if Penn's going to have their the sprints they have after Thanksgiving weekend, so that could be a target for us. I'm not really sure really what we're going to do with him next. But he seemed to have come out of the race well, eating and taking charge of the shed row. So, that's all good.
I love it. Well, an unusual Preakness day, obviously, and Preakness week. The racing was tremendous, and from every indication, right from the racing office through to the accommodations for those that came, and everybody was raving about how they were treated and under the circumstances made the most of it. The racing was tremendous, and still memorable and special.
Yeah, definitely. We'll clean your box out upstairs and get it ready for you, hopefully for next spring.
Yeah. Well, it's such a. It's funny you say that about the spring, because it sort of, I think on Friday, actually, I kept talking about the end of the Triple Crown season, and I sort of realized, as I was saying it, that, we're going to go to the Breeders' Cup, and we'll be gearing up for Triple Crown 10 minutes later. It's
quick turnaround.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
like those guys, they have the arenas, they got hockey one night and basketball the next. You got to throw it all together.
Exactly. Are you going to be? Are you wandering Timonium? You buying?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to go find Mig and see if I can get some of his
his
input. I heard him up there on your show, and my son's up there also. So we'll have another busy few days.
Well, Damon, get a couple of babies, and we'll look forward to what's next for Lackey, and on his way to. Joining Immortalize as a millionaire, certainly.
And, fingers crossed, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well done. Delighted for you.
Steve, thank you very much. I enjoy your program so much. You have no idea. Thank you.
Damon, thank you. Damon Diladovico, everybody. First graded stake win, even though he'd won a DeFrancis Dash going back to Immortalize. Maybe must have been seven, eight years ago. We're going to stay right here. We got about 12 minutes to fill out the morning, and 12 minutes isn't going to be enough to congratulate Peter Miller on the parade of stake wins that he has been authoring the last few weekends and even back toward Del Mar. Peter, good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Petey, let's start with Mo Forza, who's a special horse for anybody that cares about the sport when we talk about Barry Abrams and every success that this horse has is going to be just heralded and appreciated.
Yeah, it's a great story. You know, Barry's one of the most beloved trainers out here, and most people know he's been very sick with cancer, and I think this horse is definitely helping keep him alive.
You know, he had a long run-up to his return, and he's really come back, picked up where he left off. He's obviously continuing to mature, and it feels like there's still a lot more for him to give.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he's come back a better horse this year. The time off did him a world of good, mentally and physically, and we're really excited about the Breeders' Cup in 5 weeks.
How quickly? And you've got a few to bring, but how quickly will you head to Kentucky?
You know, I wait till the last minute. I keep them here, and you know, down at San Luis Rey, it's very quiet and peaceful, and the weather's good, and so we're just going to stay put, let them relax and be at home, and do all the serious training here, and fly in week of the race.
Well, and of course, we have yet to see. You know, we're kind of starting to monitor now after the ARC, you know, trying to get a feel for how many of the Euros are going to come. But you know, certainly the mile division, even domestically, and when you fold in some of the fillies and mares that are going to participate, you know, it's going to be a war. But he seems up to it and pretty excited for the prospect.
It's very exciting to have a horse like him, and you know, I just hope we can keep him as healthy and sound for another month.
How about we'll talk about yesterday as well? Tell me about Ibico. Don't know much.
You know, he's a neat little horse. We've only had him about a month and a half, 2 months from Europe. They did a great job with him, and he ran a bang-up second, first out here, and came back and won the Bob yesterday. So, you know, we're looking forward to taking him to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. And, you know, we think we got a nice horse on our hands.
This is, I think, on Wednesday when I'm joined by Sid Fernando, we'll have to dig into this breeding. Autod out of a Sir Percy mare, and
don't ask me. I've never heard of either one of them.
We're gonna figure out a little bit. This was exciting. I mean, and you know, I got to say one thing. It came up on my website too, Peter. The fact that Pereira couldn't go to the whip, and you know, some people said, you know what, Tarantino might have won that race. What's your take on all of this?
Well, you know, I thought we would have won the race easier if my jock could have used the whip.
Okay.
it's a shame. You know, the rule is a shame, and it's bad for the gambler, and it's bad for the owner. It's very rare in this industry that you could have the gambler, the owners, the trainers, and the jockeys all in agreement that a rule is bad, but that's what we have here. So yeah, it really needs to be modified big time, because you're not, a lot of these races, the best horses aren't winning. And, you know, owners, gamblers, you know, they spend a lot of money on this game, and
yep,
and you know, they deserve a fair chance.
Well put. Let me get back to last weekend and, of course, the American Pharoah upset with Get Her Number. And when we talk about owners that give to the game so generously, nobody better than Gary Barber. And to get a grade one three-year-old, really exciting.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, he's one of the top owners in the game and really supports the industry. And so for us to buy this horse for $45,000 at Ocala a few months back and to win a grade one with him is for Gary Barber is very exciting. And, you know, another one that we're looking forward to the Breeders' Cup with.
Talk about the jump from the turf. You know, he's a dialed in out of a Bernstein mare. He had the two excellent performances, broke his maiden, first asking, going short at Del Mar, came back in the juvenile turf, ran very well on the lead, and got kind of swallowed up late, including by Ibico. But moving to the dirt, what, you know, what did you expect? And obviously it exceeded expectation.
Well, you know, he had trained really well on the dirt all along. We just kind of put him in the grass race. The timing was good for the race, and the fact that he had come from OBS, where it's a synthetic track. We thought, well, maybe we'll try him on the grass, and he ran super. He won, but I think he definitely moved way up on the dirt, and I guess I just made an error in judgment the first two races.
Well, and it's funny, you talked to McPeak earlier this morning, talked to Mark Cassie during the sale, and you know, we talk about the interchangeability with young horses, and a lot of times starting them on the turf is easier on them.
Yes, no, I agree, and that was part of the thinking. I do like starting a lot of young horses on the grass. I think they have a better experience without the kickback, and it's a little bit easier on them physically. So we've done that quite a bit, but you know, we just kind of lucked into running him in the American Pharoah. We were supposed to run Superman Shaq. He came down with a bunch of mucus, so you know, we thought we put in the second stringer, but maybe he was the first stringer.
Pretty exciting. Got a very solid mid-80s buyer out of it in 84, and all systems go for Breeders' Cup?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he came out of the race super, and you know, it's always tough to win Breeders' Cup races. You know, Brad Cox has a very nice two-year-old, and mm-hmm. Steve's got a bunch of nice two-year-olds. So, you know, it's never easy, but, you know, we're gonna give it our best.
A couple of quick hits, too, because we've got two more winners to talk about. And I guess the question is, when I look at Bulletproof One, Gary Barber, Cecil Barber, Aaron Wellman, Adam Wachtel, and you, when's her bat mitzvah?
Yeah, well, you know, it sounds like a law firm. She's something else. And I think we're actually considering the Breeders' Cup turf sprint for her. She's run 295 buyers in her yep. last two turf sprints. And you know, I think she deserves a chance. I know you know, Gary's got Stormy, who's obviously a top class mare. Planning to run in there, but it's a wide open division, and we would get a lot of weight with a 3-year-old filly. So we're seriously considering it.
How about that, Bulletproof One, and of course Gary having won last year with the mare, going back.
Belvoir Bay, yeah,
yes, with Belvoir, the 7-year-old. Finally, we're going to run out of time, but CZ Rocket again with Gary and partners, including Sal Kuhman and Tom Kegley. Deciding and dedicating this 6-year-old back to sprinting, this is what he was always cut out to be.
Yeah, well, his pedigree said it. You know, he does look like a horse that'll get two turns, and he's won going two turns. So, you know, he's just a good horse, and, you know, Tom Cagle picked him out. I'd like to take credit, but I can't. And, you know, Tom picked the horse out to claim, and he's just, you know, been a dream come true, and really excited about his prospects for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. He loves Keeneland. He's got the track record there at 6.5. And, you know, just exciting.
You know what? You're gonna have to commission a plane. You're gonna have to charter a plane for these Breeders' Cup starters.
I don't know. I think we'll be okay with Tex Sutton, but yeah, it's exciting. It's certainly gonna be our largest contingent ever for the Breeders' Cup, and I think we got a lot of live shots. But you know, you gotta get lucky, and you gotta stay healthy and sound, and so we're a long ways away, but our fingers are crossed.
Pete, keep him healthy, happy. I'm glad to catch up. Well done these last few weeks.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate what you do for the industry.
Awfully kind. Peter Miller, everybody, and just a host of successes, and hadn't had a chance to catch up with Peter, and we've got to do a quick tap dance to get out here. This was a busy morning, as expected, with Andy Beyer, Ken McPeak, Joe Bianca, Damon Dellodovico, Jimmy Ryerson, Mig, and Pete Miller, and two stakes today, folks. You've got at Finger Lakes the Lady Finger, 352, and then later at Presque Isle, 625, the Presque Isle Debutante. So, two-year-old fillies on display today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Another big slate of recapping from the huge weekend. Good luck if you're playing today. Talk to you in the morning.
You have to go killing all the bees.
Hey-oh!
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.